The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So keep your texts coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, in her 20s, while working for Vanity Fair, Rachel Williams befriended a socialite called Anna. Anna Delvey was seemingly a German heiress with money to spare, and she took Rachel along for the ride. Free dinners in the most exclusive restaurants, personal training sessions with a celebrity fitness coach, and an all-expenses trip to Marrakesh in Morocco. That was until Rachel found out that Anna actually wasn't who she thought she was. She discovered Anna was a fraud and is now currently serving prison time for grand larceny. Rachel joins us on the line now to share her story. Nice to talk to you, Rachel.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Listen, I mean, it sounds like a storyline from a movie, and we've all seen these con artist movies, but you never imagine in a million years that you're going to be caught up in the middle of it, right?
No, not for a second. I thought I was a very good judge of character before this.
So tell me about Anna, and how did you meet her? When did you first meet?
Sure. I met Anna out one night when I was with some friends I knew from New York. It was in 2016. And during that summer, she became a part of our friend group. And I hung out with her a few times one-on-one, but she was just kind of someone in the mix that was around.
Okay. And when you first met her, like, what struck you about her? What was she like?
She was fun-loving. She was ambitious. I thought she was clever. She was working on this art foundation with her, she said it was her trust fund, and I admired that somebody with so much wealth as I imagined her to have was so motivated to do something, you know, so substantive with her money.
Mm. And what did she tell you of her background?
She said that she was from Cologne, Germany, that she had a younger brother who was about 12 years younger than her, but she was raised mostly as an only child. She said she was not close with her parents. I did not pry about money. She had told the same story to so many people that what she didn't tell me directly, other people filled in just sort of in conversation. Mm. But, you know, as people do, it wasn't something that we discussed really explicitly one-on-one.
Sure, and it's never nice to talk about money, but clearly you knew she was loaded because she was paying for everything, and she was setting up this foundation. And right. At the time, she was living in the Standard Hotel, in a suite in the Standard Hotel in New York.
Yes, that's correct. And then she left and came back in February of 2017 and checked into a hotel called 11 Howard, where she would live for the next 3 months.
Mm. You see, if that was me, I would absolutely want to know. And maybe I am more crass than you, but, you know, to have that amount of money, and she became quite a good friend of yours. So did you never have that conversation about where her money came from?
Well, she did say that, you know, without me prying, she did tell me it came from her family. And she said that it came, I think, from a grandfather is what she had told me. I don't know exactly where the wealth originated in her story. But okay. She also asked me about how much money I made, and I told her, and she laughed at me, which I think, you know, some people might have been insulted by that. But I also at the time felt underpaid, so I kind of found it supportive in this very backwards way.
And where were you working at the time?
I was working as a photo editor at Vanity Fair, which was a job I loved. It was my dream job, and I had been there for over 6 years when I met Anna.
Okay. And when I was reading about it, because obviously it was all over the media, it was all over social media, her trial at the time, I mean, she did pay for everything.
I think, you know, it's funny, in hindsight, there's this view of her as going out all the time to all the best restaurants. But when I knew Anna, I felt like her only friend. You know, we spent most of our time in her hotel. There was a nice restaurant on the ground level, and she was very convincing, and she made it seem so, like, easy and casual. And yes, she was very generous. But I was living paycheck to paycheck. This person was my friend. She seemed, you know, happy to be this generous. And it was for, you know, 2 months of my life. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, 8 weeks. It wasn't every day, it was often, but it was just this weird little phase. And she was a sociopath. So she had this charm where, you found yourself just sort of sucked into her orbit. And before I knew it, yes, I spent a lot of time with this person. And in hindsight, I think it's easier to pick it apart. But
of course, of course. And, you know, as I said, like, you've seen that movie, Catch Me If You Can. Had you seen that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio? And And you just never, did you ever doubt at any point up until that trip to Morocco that things might not have been what she said they were.
You know, it wasn't even in Morocco that I began to doubt. It was like 2 months after that when I was waiting on this imaginary wire transfer. I believed that she was who she said she was. I had never met anybody who was just living a complete lie.
Okay. So she and you had worked out together. She's paying for these $300 training sessions with a celebrity personal trainer. Uh-huh. And then she goes, you know what? Let's take this trip to Morocco.
Yeah.
And what had she told you about the trip? Where did she want to stay? And
because she wasn't a US citizen, she needed to leave every 3 months to reset her visa. And she pitched this trip as though she wanted to work on a documentary about the creation of that art foundation. And she wanted to try bringing a videographer along on this trip to see what it was like to have someone around with a camera. And maybe it could be the beginning of this documentary.
Okay.
So she pitched it as almost a business expense. And first it was just, I'm going to get this villa in Marrakesh. Who should we invite? I want to invite the personal trainer and a videographer. And then it kind of dominoed from there. It wasn't, you know, from the offset, let's go on an all expenses paid vacation, like some sort of pop-up ad you might get on a computer. Mm. I think I might have seen through that differently, but it kind of just snowballed.
It was kind of plausible that this was sort of a work trip that she was going to document for social media.
And she lived in hotels all the time in New York too, so it seemed very much, you know, a part of her normal behavior and lifestyle.
How was she bankrolling the hotel bills?
Well, she was, what I now know, check kiting. She was basically weaving money out of thin air by writing herself checks from one account to another account at different banks and then withdrawing the money before the checks bounced.
Wow.
Yeah, clever. Wow. She was clever. You know, she was fooling these institutions that have checks in place for fraud. And if they fell for her, of course, a friend who trusts her as a friend. I feel like, you know, it must have been easy to fool me.
Sure. Yeah. And so you ended up in Morocco. It was all supposed to be paid for. But actually, before you even got on the flights, you ended up handing over your credit card, right?
She was crafty. Yeah, I did. On the day we were supposed to leave, the flights hadn't been booked. And of course, because I was a photo producer and so often booked travel for people with crazy schedules, this didn't strike me as odd since she said she didn't know what time she's going to get out of meetings. And then, you know, she's caught in something and asks for my help booking the flights. And that's something I do all the time, like I've said. So yeah, it's easy. You're paying for this trip. I'd love to help however I can. With what card? Sends me a card. The card doesn't go through. She then says, oh, the airline people are leaving in 10 minutes. Can you help? And I, you know, when people act in situations where there's urgency or stress, I think decisions become less rational. Mm. And so I, at that point, fronted the cost for 4 travelers to fly to Marrakesh.
Okay, so you pay for the flights, you get there,
yep.
You land in your hotel, and what happened there?
Everything seems fine for the first day and a half or so. And then when we leave the hotel for the first time, Anna's cards don't work when she's picked out $1,300 worth of dresses in the marketplace. And I ask her if she's told her bank she's traveling. She says no. So of course I think, well, yeah, they probably think it's fraud.
And we've all been there where you've forgotten to tell your bank that you're going away. And,
right.
Yeah.
It's completely understandable. And since she already owes me money, she says, well, why don't we just add this to the amount that I'm going to wire you next week? So it just keeps adding up and keeps adding up. And then, of course, the major thing was that midway through the trip, we realized the hotel doesn't have a functioning card on file. And these two managers appear in our villa on my last full day in Morocco, and they refuse to leave without a functioning credit card. And Anna pressures me to give them mine.
And let's kind of set the scene here, because this wasn't a 3-star charter flight hotel. This was the best of the best.
Oh, gosh. Yes, it was.
How much was your villa per night?
I think it was around $7,000 per night. Yeah, it was a private villa. It was it was its own little small house. There was a butler. There were 3 private bedrooms. I had never been anywhere like that. I've traveled a lot through work and through, you know, family, friends, and with my family. It just never something like this. It was excessive.
Okay, so you came to check out of the hotel, and her cards weren't on file.
No. Exactly. The card, you know, a hotel is supposed to have a card on file before you check in. So these managers arrive and they say, we need the card that we're supposed to have on file before you check in. The bill will be settled when you check out.
Sorry, and they arrived into your room.
Yes, they were standing in our villa and effectively blocking our path to the door, just insisting upon having a credit card. And I was told that that was for the temporary charge that a hotel often makes when you check in. You know, you're used to seeing, normally it's closer to what, $200, not $30,000. But
was the total, was it?
I didn't realize that at first, but I was told that would be temporary and that a credit for that amount would appear back in my account. And I was leaving before Anna, so she was going to check out on her own, at which point I thought she would need to settle the bill. But of course, after I was gone, I continued on to France for a work trip. When I landed, she then texts me and says, oh, why are you $70,000 on Monday? The like, you know, the whole bill's going on your cards.
$70,000.
Yeah, well, she raised the number spontaneously, but she owed me $62,000. But it was a Friday, and she said, I'll send you the confirmation for the wire this evening, and you'll have the money early next week. So,
and can I ask you, Rachel, at that time when you were working for Vanity Fair, and when she laughed at you, what you earned in a year, how much of that bill was what you earned in a year?
Oh, that was more than I made in a year.
Yeah.
And she certainly knew that. Yeah, but you know, I, as awkward and as stressed and as terrified as I was by that balance, I still trusted my friend. And knowing the total, which was so much bigger than, you know, I didn't know I could put that much money on my credit cards. I felt awkward that, you know, I felt grateful to her for having spent so much on this lavish vacation and for inviting me as her guest. So I was, you know, nervous and stressed and trying to be as clear as possible about the seriousness of the money, but also thank you so much for having me, and I'm sorry that like this worked out this way. I know it was stressful for you too.
And did her demeanor change at all when she was confronted by staff, you know?
Mm-hmm. She was, in hindsight, very, or even in the moment, she seemed disconnected.
Okay.
She didn't seem shaken by the seriousness of the situation in the same way that I was, or that I think other people would be.
Mm. So you believed she was waiting on an inheritance. When did you suspect that she was conning you?
I thought for a long time that she was having some sort of a mental health problem, like a disconnect from reality, or had, you know, crossed her parents one too many times. I first began to suspect in late July.
Okay, so how many months after the trip to Morocco?
2 months.
2 months, okay. And in that time, she got back to New York, you got back to New York after your work trip. Did you stay very friendly, or did she sort of step back from your friendship, or how did that work?
All of our conversation, you know, it sort of distilled into this back and forth about money. And she was in touch with me every single day with excuses and apologies and excuses and apologies. And it just sent me in this spiral of, you know, chaos. I just couldn't figure out what was happening. But she did stay in touch. I wouldn't say she remained a close friend at all.
Okay. So going back to, sorry, I interrupted you there. When did you suspect, or how did you suspect then that she was definitely conning you?
Well, after she sent me spinning in circles for 2 months, and I, while still staying in touch with her, had gone to lawyers and realized for complicated reasons that I explained in the book, that wasn't a path I should go. And then I went to the police, and they gave me this very patronizing, well, like, there's nothing we can do, but with your face, don't worry, sweetie, like, you could start a GoFundMe page to get your money. I had kept striking out. So we confronted her in person, and seeing, we being the personal trainer who had gone with us, one of her friends, and I sat her down, and seeing the way that she responded, you know, without any sincere understanding of the terrible time I was going through and how much trouble I was in, she was just disconnected and you know, worried about how she was suddenly appearing in these tabloids for having stiffed bills in New York. And the day after that, I found my way to the district attorney's office and realized she was the subject of an investigation.
And were you completely and utterly shocked that you realized that this was actually bigger than you? This was across New York.
Yeah, I was reeling. It was so incomprehensible. But at the same time, even though it was my worst case scenario, it was the first solid like explanation that made sense of the chaos. And I had, part of what was so frustrating, aside from the money, which was so destabilizing, was not being able to find answers to explain it.
So when you did go to the authorities, what did you find out? I mean, how much had she defrauded people, and who had she defrauded?
Yeah, when I first went, they couldn't really tell me anything about the investigation. So I gave them everything I had, because I had been obviously investigating on my own. But after she was indicted and then arraigned, I realized that she had been check kiting, as we've discussed. And then, you know, she was trying to get I think it was $22 to $25 million from various financial institutions, hedge funds in New York. So it was mass scale. It was big scale fraud she was committing.
Did you go to any of the court cases?
I actually had to testify against her. Mm-hmm. So I only attended during my testimony, which was, it was very hard. It was a hard experience.
And again, sitting, looking at her, mm-hmm. Was there that disconnect, that sense of no remorse?
Oh, yes. When I avoided looking at her for the most part, but when I had to identify the defendant, I looked up and she was looking me in the eye and smirking. So it just really confirmed for me that this is a person who just doesn't get it. Mm. Yeah.
I know you've written about that you did a lot of research after the case and after the trial to find out more about how people's brains work who are con artists and who are sociopaths. You know, what did you learn about her, or did it all fit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. Like, if I knew, if I were going through it and knowing what I know now about the indicators, would I have caught it? I think the biggest indicator would be someone who has this magnetic allure that you can't explain and you can't put your finger on. Even now, you know, even though I really did like her, I have a hard time articulating what it was. There's just sort of this like thing that pulls you in and you don't know what it is, but they're so charming. But like, that is the biggest indicator, you know, in hindsight, as I keep saying. Are there other things? Yeah, superficial charm, glibness, you know, lack of remorse, all of these things that she certainly ticks all the boxes, but that's the main one.
Mm. And I remember watching the trial because she became a cult figure during that time. She turned up in the best outfits. She was dressed in Chanel. She had this social media page. I mean, literally, it sort of caught the world's attention that she was almost gloating in this social media frenzy that was around her. And am I right in saying that did she have a personal stylist for her court appearances as well?
You're quite right. She did, yes. Yeah, yeah. It was extremely frustrating for me to watch, but it also made perfect sense. It was the same thing that I had witnessed her doing all along, you know, getting by on this peacocking and hoping that people pay more attention to, you know, like it's not taking it seriously, and then maybe turning a blind eye to the places where she's cutting corners or committing serious crimes. And although ultimately the jury convicted her of most of the charges, she still played a lot to the court of public opinion. And here she is with this Netflix deal, having gotten $30,000 from them to pay for her lawyer, which is so backwards. It was extremely frustrating for me to watch, having lived through so much.
So what did the jury decide? What did she get?
She was sentenced to 4 to 12 years. They did not find her guilty of her crimes towards me, which was devastating given that all of the evidence was there and I lived through it. And I know so obviously that it was criminal, but she, you know, her lawyer did a good job of sort of sugarcoating, I think, her had to fake it till she could make it mentality, and questioning whether or not she would have paid me back if she could have gotten the money and intention and all of these things.
Mm. And how do you feel, Rachel, about everything looking back on it now? Because it is still quite recent, and I know you described it as a very traumatic experience overall.
Yeah, I understand trauma is relative, and there are people who go through long-term relationships that may take a turn like this, or, you know, have things they lose and can't get back. But for me, in my life, this was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. And to feel that betrayal from someone that you thought you knew and liked and that you had shown goodwill to for so long, it was very painful, and it's taken a long time to recover from. And writing the book actually really helped
a lot with that.
Yeah.
And because, as you said, it's traumatic. You put your trust in somebody, and then you're also dealing with that feeling, I'd imagine, of, you know, how was I gullible, or how did I let that person fool me? Is that something that you battled with as well?
To some extent, but I also think I've come away from this more aware of myself as a trusting person and as someone who looks for good in other people, and I don't want to feel negatively towards those impulses because I think they're healthy and I think they're important. You know, you want to connect with people in your life. You want to have relationships that you can believe in. But I think knowing that that is my, you know, my way of being, I can be more aware of those instances where I find myself making excuses for the same person again and again and again. If that's happening, it's time to step back. And when they show you who they are, believe them, you know. You can't.
So, going back to the finances, did you get that money back? Did you get the $32,000 back?
I did. The whole $62,000, in fact, after a lot of hard work. I contested the charges with American Express after I learned that Anna was a con artist. And after a lot of back and forth, they ultimately did protect me from the hotel charges, which was wonderful and a huge relief. And then I also was able to, you know, make some money through writing the book that I used to partially repay some loans I had had to take from friends.
Okay. So your friends stood by you, your family stood by and helped you out. And, as you said, you wrote this book. It's My Friend Anna is the name of the book. What was it like? Was it quite cathartic, as you said, writing it?
Extremely. It was also hard because I had to revisit all of these really painful exchanges and experiences and unpack them and break them apart so I could really understand what was happening. But it was extremely cathartic, and I feel much more capable of talking to you without bursting into tears because of the fact I think I've explored it so fully.
Mm. And then, of course, there is the HBO series that's coming up with Lena Dunham. Tell me about that.
I'm thrilled that Lena Dunham is working on it for HBO, and I expect to be involved, and I look forward to having more news to announce on that front, hopefully sometime soon.
Okay, and this is on the back of the book that you wrote, or yes, on the back of the story? This is specifically on your book?
Specifically on, yes, my book, and yes, there is the Netflix adaptation as well. I think they're working with Anna directly, but I feel there are so many facets to this, and there are different angles, clearly. So I think in some ways, maybe if they both happen, they'll complement each other.
Mm. And so what's going to happen? She gets out. I mean, she's not going to do 12 years or whatever they sentenced her to. Like, she's going to get out. Is she going to be deported? Is she going to be involved in this Netflix documentary? Of course she is, but is she going to benefit from that? Are you going to have to work alongside with her?
Oh, absolutely not, to the last question. No chance. There's a reason I'm working on a separate project. I wouldn't sacrifice, you know, my morals and my feeling towards this person for the sake of entertainment. You know, I think being entertained is part of why people are wearing those t-shirts, and I like entertainment too, but I think there's a deeper problem here, and I don't think she's somebody to be celebrated. But when she gets out, I don't expect she's going to suddenly reform and be this moralistic, kind-hearted person. I think once a sociopath, always a sociopath. I think she'll continue to manipulate the people around her. And yes, I think she'll be deported.
If you could go back, what would you change?
You know, I've actually tried hard not to feel so much regret or to look at it that way, because I can't change anything. I think it's more like, what can I learn and how can I change going forward? I acted from a place of goodwill. You know, what did I, you know, and some people are like, when it looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true. And I understand that to some extent, but at the same time, I think it's okay to believe in your friends, to trust your friends and to want to be there for them. Mm. So I'm not going to spend too much time, if I can help it, feeling regret.
Mm. You're dead right. And tell me, how has life been since, or you're still living in New York? Mm-hmm. Has this now writing, has that become your full-time job, or are you still with Vanity Fair?
It's still very fresh. We turned this book around very fast, so I feel that writing has taken up a lot of time. I actually got laid off from Vanity Fair in February, which was in some ways a godsend. I don't think I could have finished the book had I been still balancing my full-time job. Mm. And now the book is out, and this, you know, talking to you and has been such a learning experience and something I'm really grateful for. And now I'm just taking a moment to regroup before I figure out what comes next.
Well, Rachel, lovely chatting to you today. That's Rachel Williams. The book is called My Friend Anna, the true story of Anna Delvey, the fake heiress of New York City, and it's out now. Rachel, thanks again. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.